What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have another special show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and accomplished jazz guitarist. He has recorded and performed with pop artists such as Celine Dion, Lionel Richie, Jennifer Lopez, as well as jazz pop artists Bobby Caldwell, Mary Meadows, and Kim Waters. He is the leader of the Grammy-nominated contemporary jazz group Special Effects. Please put your hands together and welcome smooth jazz guitarist, composer, and producer Chielli Mannucci. How's it going, Chielli?
It's good, Spud. Thanks. Good to be here.
Oh, man, the pleasure's all mine, man. Big fan of your work, man, and, you know, just to have you on the show to chop it up with me one-on-one, it's truly a privilege. Thank you.
To me also. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Now, Chielli, man, I want to talk, before we start the interview, man, I just want to, you know, first let you know, man, one of the songs you did back in 03 was really how I got put onto you, Kicking It Hard. It was off of your Night Groove CD.
I know it.
Oh, man, it was just a lot of radio play right here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, man. I mean, the sound is just melodic.
Oh, that's great. Well, we play Kicking It Hard at most of our shows, and yeah, the audiences have always dug it, and the song's really evolved. The live version we do is really a nice version of it. It's pretty long, and it incorporates a couple of other surprises in it. So the song, the song's evolved since we recorded it.
Nice. Yeah, I would love to definitely check that out, man.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it as I'm sitting at this computer here. I'll shoot it off to you as we're talking.
Gotta love technology, man.
Yeah, I do.
Now, man, you had such a lot of success as an independent artist as well as with Special Effects, Chielli. I mean, how did the venture start with the group and then, switching back and forth with your independent career?
It all started originally back when I was in my 20s, around 82, 1983, sometime around then. And I met up with the percussionist George Ginda, who was from Budapest, Hungary, and George and I met through the bassist who was in the first incarnation of Special Effects, a fellow by the name Fernando Saunders, who was at the time working with John McLaughlin, and later on ended up working with Lou Reed and groups like Heart and Marianne Faithfull, And in any case, George and I, we didn't know each other too well, but we landed a record contract in Europe, that first CD was eventually released in the States in 1984 on GRP Records, and then we actually moved over to GRP Records, and by 1985 we had released our first official American release, and that got the whole thing started. And we didn't have any radio at the time; it was just touring, making LPs and touring, no CDs yet,
right?
And we just kind of like got into this thing, man. We were doing basically one album per year and going on the road and promoting it. Real good old-fashioned grassroots, trying to make a living doing it and having a great time. And, all these years have passed, and it's still real similar to that. The difference today is that George, unfortunately, is no longer alive. He passed on about 9 years ago. And somewhere in the middle of all that, we both did solo CDs. We wanted to try to do some stuff on the side. And, that kind of got this other thing going where George would do a solo CD and I would do a solo CD. And then we'd do a Special Effects CD. And, there was a lot of music going on. And he played on my CDs and I played what happened was that after George passed on, I was actually making CDs under both names, under Chielli Mannucci Solo and Special Effects. And, there really wasn't that much difference in them. I mean, it was, I tried a couple of conceptual things to create variation. At one point, we did this record called Party, which is on Shanaky. That's the name of the label that put that one out. And Party was my idea to feature the saxophonist in the band at the time, David Mann. So I really featured him on a lot of the tunes, that kind of thing. But as time went on, the label asked me if I wouldn't mind just calling it Chielli Mannucci and Special Effects. And I'm like, I've been kind of waiting for you to ask for a while. because that's what it is all the time anyway to me. So
sure,
that's what we're doing now, and you know, all's good. Got a new CD out in my first independent release under my own label, and it's called Without You. And last year, well, midway through 2010, I released it. But actually, 2011 right now is the official release because we're promoting a single, and you know, we're doing a tour starting in March. Got a whole bunch of things coming up. So
nice.
It's a lengthy answer, but it's a long story. The band's been around for a long time, so there's a lot I can tell you.
Well, you know, when I listen to your compositions, Kieli, I mean, you definitely have a universal sound. That I feel that translates well from coast to coast and from different countries and so forth. It's very melodic, and there's definitely a lot of virtuoso going on within a lot of your tracks that I've heard amongst the years, man. And you know, it just astounds me, you know, your ability as a musician, man. It's just off the charts.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Now, who are some of your musical influences as a guitarist, man?
Well, certainly when I was coming up, my early loves in guitar music were, guys like Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton, from just a brief period when he was playing more of a rock blues thing. He was into early Cream, and I also loved Leslie West from Mountain. I just kind of Ernie Isley later on, and then it started evolving into people like Jeff Beck and John McLaughlin, even Aldo Meola. As I got a little older, I really liked that, and I've admired many, many guitarists over the years. I mean, one of my favorites, really, when I was a teenager, was John Scofield, who I just worked with recently in Europe, which is pretty cool. I mean, it's kind of nice that a lot of these guys I've come to know and work alongside, and it's an honor, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say, man, you know, with your experience, and you've been around for a minute, man, you're touring and playing with other seasoned musicians as well. How has that impacted your style on stage, and you know, bringing those traits into the studio?
Well, I don't, you know, at this point, I'm really trying to, you know, just do my own thing. You know, I mean, I'm sure that as most musicians have this experience, that the people that I studied, particularly when I was in my teens and my early 20s, have a great influence on the way I sound now. Like, for instance, I'm a real lover of the band Genesis from England, you know, Phil Collins.
Oh, yeah.
And Peter Gabriel, and I love that stuff. But you know, the guitarist in the band, Steve Hackett, had a style of playing that I admired. But I don't think I sound like Steve Hackett at all. There might be a couple of things I do from time to time that guitar aficionados might recognize a little influence there. But I don't know. I don't think that people would hear me and say, hey, he obviously listened to George Benson, or he obviously listened to John McLaughlin. I don't think it's really like that at this point. Maybe, you know, when you're... I think that most musicians, as they're honing their craft, they imitation is okay at first. I mean, you really want to try to get your sound developed on your own after a while, though. And hopefully that's where I've come. I don't know.
No, I definitely agree with you, man. You know, being a keyboardist myself, you know, when you're first starting out, and you know, you try to mirror your mentors musically, and you know, try to do what they do, just try to walk in the shoes. But you know, eventually, as your talent and your ear and your ability as a musician excels, you really start to get into your own style. And at that point, you're pretty much taking small licks and dynamics here and there from a lot of people and really making it to your own. So no, I definitely agree with you.
Well, yeah, we'll you know, sometimes it works out pretty good. I work with and talk with a lot of younger players, and you know, for instance, I worked recently with this young sax player who's in, I guess he's 17 or 18 or something, and he has a great tone. His tone and his way of phrasing is much more mature than most guys would be at his age. You know, he's not a fast player, he's not a blistering player, but he's a thoughtful, melodic player, and he really sounds like a lot of guys. And we had this conversation about how it's really great what he's doing and where he's at, and I suggested to him that he focus some of his, like, put himself out of his comfort zone a little bit, that's where we grow. And like, for instance, just fast forwarding to myself, like I did a gig a couple of days ago in Long Island with Steve Adelson, who's a Chapman stick player, and a fellow named David Langlois, who's a percussionist. And he's kind of like, he's a French cat, he's like a gypsy percussionist. And we were doing Django Reinhardt tunes and Wes Montgomery and a couple of Coltrane songs, and it was totally different than what I'm used to doing, and especially that playing with these particular guys. And I found it to be one of the more satisfying gigs I've done in a long time, you know?
Yeah.
And I hope the audience felt that way too. I don't know. But it felt like some new things were going on because of the environment I was in, and that's so important for musicians, you know?
It is. You know, I always felt that the cool stuff is always outside the box. You know what I mean? Because then, you know, I think a lot of times we can get away with getting into arrangements and become pattern players of memory and, you know, simple grooves that we do over and over. But if you step outside the comfort zone, man, different progressions and different tempos and rhythm arrangements may be thrown your way. And, you know, be able to blend in as a musician, you really kind of have to go back to the basics and really focus on the fundamentals of the craft to blend in. You know, I definitely agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, the key is to just keep playing and play a lot. Like, you know, I mean, most people know me as the leader of my own band, but I do work as a sideman in a few other groups. And that whole palette of different experiences is, you know, hopefully leading me to something better. And, you know, it's the learning never ends. It's endless, you know.
Oh, totally. I remain a student of music, man. I've been tuning in 20 years, and, you know, I still feel like a baby once in a while, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, man.
I know that feeling real well.
Well, you know, I was going to ask you, man. You've been in the game a while, recording and performing, and, you know, now we're into the world of DAW recording. You know, give me your pros and cons, analog and DAW, and, you know, what your format you're using now and, you know, why you're using it this way.
I guess it's funny that you asked that. I started out as a, you know, I'm kind of trained in arranging and, you know, just writing. I mean, a lot of writing and the recording. I always teamed up with my engineer, Paul Wycliffe, from Skyline Studios. And he's been my engineer since day one, and I still work with him. He did my last album, but the difference is now that I have my own production studio in New York City, and I do a lot of the recording myself. I mean, I've learned a lot of things about how to record acoustic instruments over the years, and I don't really consider myself an engineer, just a kind of junior engineer. I'm pretty good at mixing, though, but the system that I ended up getting was the one that I observed a friend of mine who I used to work with. He was the programmer, so, you know, he was working with Digital Performer, my Mark of the Unicorn, and I just learned how to run it because I kept watching him do it, and I'm pretty good at it now. You know, a lot of the stuff on my records, on my new CDs in particular, was recorded in Digital Performer. But the technique that I like to work with is that I'll record the instruments, everything except the drum kit, because I don't have a drum room in my studio. But I'll record with Digital Performer, and then when I have all of the parts done, I'll transfer everything, and then we'll mix it in Pro Tools. And when we get to the Pro Tools phase, the mixing phase, I let Paul do everything. I'm just ears at that point, which is really important for me, because I can't go from zero. I can't go from start to finish and feel comfortable that I've, you know, been objective.
Sure.
Now, so I find the sound of the digital workstations is fine. I mean, nowadays, if you know, it depends. This is a big question for any producers. What do you want your music to sound like? And 90% of that comes from the song you wrote and the arrangement that you came up with, you know, what instruments you used and you know, what parts they played. But as far as the sonic quality, if it's analog versus digital, I don't think that people can tell that any longer. The digital technology is so advanced that, you know, you can make an incredibly beautiful recording either way. You know, the quality of the players and the way the technique of recording is what matters. Where if it's recorded in Pro Tools or Digital Performer or Sonic or Catwalk or Cakewalk or on analog tape, half inch. Some people still do that, or yeah. 2-inch tape. I don't think you can really tell most of the time if the engineer's really good.
No, I agree with you, and it goes back to the converters and the mic pre's that you're using to color the sound and really getting a good signal chain in for recording. You know,
yeah.
That's where, you know, yeah. The basics, man. You know, a lot of guys like me have great equipment, but man, if your signal chain isn't really popping and, you know, there's no EQs or good compressions, yeah, it's going to sound like any other system out there. So it's all about the driver.
It really is. Like, for instance, I've found that certain microphones and certain preamps, they just sound great all the time. And if there's something that didn't come out just right, my mix engineer can tweak it and get it just right, you know. If he feels like if I record my guitar direct without an amplifier and it, you know, the part comes out great and it sounds really great, he may decide that, you know what, we can add the amplifier sound afterwards. We need to add the amplifier sound. This will make it sound a little bit more organic, you know. And we have these discussions about why we would do that and if we're going to do that. And you know, that's why it's great to have another set of ears help you finish the project.
Sure. Now, Keely, I want to talk a little bit about composition. I mean, you come from a big big diverse background, producing, composing, and also TV and film work as well. Are there any specific methods that you're using when composing these songs for yourself, the artist, or TV or film?
Well, I mean, each situation is different. I mean, you know, for instance, the technique to, you know, the recording technique for making the special effects CDs and the Keely Minucci CDs has been pretty similar over the years. I'm a little bit old-fashioned. I'll get the band together in the studio and we'll knock out a couple of days in a row, and then the rest of the project is overdubs and mixing. The quicker the better. I like to get the first takes and I like things to be still fresh. So, you know, that technique to me is pretty standard. I know that nowadays, though, a lot of young guys don't do it that way. But that's kind of, I mean, I think that I was kind of raised on the traditional way of recording, which was, you know, at least begin live. I mean, overdubbing afterwards is, everybody does that now.
Right.
When it comes to scoring, let's say a cue for TV, it depends. Now, if there's video footage involved where I'm synchronizing the music to the video footage, actually, that's what I love doing the most. I don't get to do that as often as I'd like to. I've done a lot of TV composing where I'll just do mood pieces that I kind of, you know, I don't even know what the scene is going to be.
Sure.
You know, sometimes somebody will send a piece of music to me and say, listen from 1 minute and 10 seconds to 1 minute and 40 seconds, listen and come up with a piece of music that's got that kind of mood, but make your piece of music 3 minutes long, and very specific mechanical requests, like, you know, let the piece of music have a build up at the end and have a dead stop button, or maybe the request will be to have the piece of music kind of fade down, and not like audio fade, but just kind of wind down organically in its mix of the arrangement.
Sure.
Each situation is completely different in terms of, you know, writing and arranging, but recording, it's easy with digital performer. You know, can just hit number 3 on the keyboard and you're in record.
Yeah, no, Multus makes some great products, man. On top of Digital Performer, they make some pretty decent interfaces, prosumer stuff. But, you know, mm-hmm. Again, they make really great products. And, you know, you're not the only one that's out there is using Digital Performer. I found a lot of producers and keyboarders are leaning to the Motu platform of recording versus Logic or Pro Tools. So, yeah, hats off to Motu.
Well, I've never used Logic, and the guys that I know that work with it love it, and it sounds great. And to be honest with you, guys that use Reason or some of the even GarageBand, which to me was like a junior system, you know, man, you put those tools in the hand of a guy who knows what he's doing, and it sounds great.
Yeah, totally. You know? I'm a Logic Pro user. I've been using Logic for the past 6 years now. Prior to that, right. Pro Tools, and I've used Cubase, and, you know, I tapped into Reason, but Logic overall as an overall DAW. And being a keyboardist, I just love the way I was able to customize my templates for my jobs and sessions that I do for recording and also tracking for myself. And it, again, it just really goes back to the user. You know what I mean? I mean, someone who's been using Digital Performer a long time is going to be able to maneuver and drive a little better than someone that's just starting out on a Pro Tools system, you know, just because you're experienced and things.
I did a project last year it was for a music production library called Gotham Music, and the job was to create 20 pieces of music that were, the project was called Wonderfully Wacky, and it was supposed to be music that spanned everything from, you know, film composer Danny Elfman's kind of writing, you know, Edward Scissorhands and The Nightmare Before Christmas, this kind of orchestral fantasy writing, everything from that to comedy, you know, to like even like slapstick old style guitar, you know, jazz, you know, stomp kind of music. And I found that in general that because I would, that orchestral, the orchestral side of the project, what I did was the first piece that I worked on, I needed to create a palette of instrumentation, you know, for it. Like, for instance, you know, everything from xylophones to marimbas to, you know, to any mallet-based instrument to the full orchestra. I mean, the horns and the strings and all of the different aspects of orchestra and percussion.
Yeah.
And once I had that, I set the palette up. That was the palette I started every new song with. So I would always have those instruments would be available to me each time that I opened up a new file. Most guys that work and do this kind of work, this is very standard what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And when it was time to do the pieces that were like, you know, that fast, like, stomping guitar stuff, I didn't need anything for that except a couple of audio tracks because that was all live.
Nice.
Yeah.
Having those sounds put up, you know, per session, I mean, that really helps out a lot. I've just been doing it for the past, I would say, maybe 2 to 3 years, you know, instead of going through my whole library looking for my sounds, just nice to have everything preloaded. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. And in the end, you know, it just speeds up the next project because, you know, the worst thing is when you have the ideas and you're not ready to record them. You know, so you want to be able to just jump in there and start recording when the ideas are fresh.
Yeah, totally agree with you.
Especially, you know, certain kinds of projects. I mean, don't forget that, you know, when a lot of studio time, I mean, I have my own studio, so this doesn't apply to necessarily doing TV kind of music, but anytime I've recorded my own records, the clock's ticking, man, you know?
Yeah.
Hang by the hour. So there's a reason to be organized, and that's part of, you know, I still remember the first time we did that first record called Modern Manners way back in 1984, 1985. And I went to Larry Rosen, who was the president of GRP Records, and I said, well, so you're going to produce this with me, right? Because I was like 27 years old. And he goes, I'm getting this record label off the ground. I don't have time. You're going to do it. Like, maybe. And then I learned that it's not just writing tunes and arranging them and rehearsing your band. Man, you got to book the studio. You got to figure out everyone's schedule. You know, you got to order the food at the session. You got to budget the food for the session. I mean, it's you know, and that's why I appreciate people who make movies. Oh my God, it's like music's only one part of that.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Well, you got a couple of producers involved with movies, but. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah. It's still a team effort, you know, to do it.
Oh yeah, you got to have a couple of guys on the team, and it can't be a one-man show all the time.
Yeah.
Now, finding that zone for creativity, Keeley, is that live or is that in the studio where you have a little bit more controlled environment where you can focus on the compositions?
You don't have to be inspired to write something really good, you know.
Right.
I mean, the way it was told to me by my wise old friend many years ago, he said that it's like eating a good piece of cake, you know?
Sure.
Not even hungry. You just ate a big dinner. You're not even hungry, man, and you take a bite of the most amazing cake in the world, and the next thing you do is take another bite, right?
Right.
And then you have, and you're stuffed, but you're onto 3 and 4 bites, and, you know, the appetite wakes up, and that happens. Yeah, you know how many people who are songwriters or composers have woken up with a melody in their head? Oh, I had it in a dream, you know, it's got to be something great, you know?
Sure.
You could dream of somebody else's melody and not even know it. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, how many times have I gone to the studio and I didn't know what I was going to write? I just knew I needed to do something. And, you know, something always comes. You know, it may not be something great, so you come up with another thing the next day. I mean, if we just wrote one piece of music in our whole lives, it would put a lot of desperation on that one piece. But I think because in my heart, anyway, music is about sharing, you know. I mean, I'm going to write something and enjoy it while I do it, but when I'm done, I'm done. I'm on to the next thing, and, you know, then I pass it on and send it to somebody or share it with somebody. And, you know, so I don't attach that much importance to it. If it's a job, though, and you have to get it done, like, hey, you need one more piece for your CD, Kaylee, and we don't have a hit song yet, you need to write a hit song. Oh, good luck. Let's write a hit song today.
Yeah, don't we wish, huh?
I used to write with this guy when I was in my 20s. We thought everything we wrote was a hit. We were convinced we were going to become staff writers at Columbia. I mean, we were just writing the hippest stuff around. Man, we couldn't get signed anywhere. You know?
Yeah.
I still think some of those tunes were really good, but, you know, it's just that I was so excited at the time because it was all so new.
Right.
But I've come to learn that, you know, some of the tunes that I feel inspiration when I'm working on, they don't really, it doesn't work that way. You know, you feel inspired when you feel inspired, and people react. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you hear a piece of music and you hate it, and then the guy sitting next to you is crying listening to it.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, it's going to impact everybody differently.
Yeah.
So, Kaylee, what's on the musical agenda for 2011?
Well, right now, the new CD, we're selling it. We're selling it, and, you know, it's getting some radio play. We're just starting to promote it. The new CD is called Without You, and the new DVD is called Live at the Java Jazz Festival. And so we're pushing those, you know, trying to get those out there. But more important than anything, we're trying to get gigs. We're trying to get live shows, because my gig's always been about playing live, so... So I've got a bunch of stuff coming up in March. I got March 11th in L.A. I'm playing at Spaghettini's south of L.A., and then I'm going to be at the Oasis Jazz Awards in San Diego the
nice.
Next day. And then we're off to Florida. I got a show at the WLOQ Orlando show. And then as soon as I get back from that, we're going to Cape Town, South Africa, and playing the Cape Town Jazz Festival. It's a little globe hopping. And then right back to the Berks Jazz Festival in Pennsylvania. So kind of all over the place in March.
Man, it's a busy agenda, man.
It's a good one.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
April's the same thing. It's just all over the place. And I'm playing with another band also. I'm working with Lau Tizer, who's a pianist from L.A., who's a great talent, great guy, and I work in his band. It's a group called Tizer, actually. It's based on his last name, but it's actually Lau on piano, myself on guitar, and Karen Briggs, the violinist. And it's and a band, so it's a seven-piece band, which is killing. It's a killing band. So I do that gig also, besides special effects.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kaylee, it's been an honor and a pleasure talking to you on my show, man. I would love to have you back, talk about your new endeavors and the new CD and performances, man. You definitely got a spot here at the Producer's Corner.
That's really great. It's good talking to you, Spud. I appreciate it.
Well, you have a safe 2011, man, and best to you and your band members.
Yeah, those guys, the greatest guys, man. Same guys for the last 18 or 19 years. It's incredible.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, let me just mention the guys in the band real quick. Our drummer's Lionel Cordu from New York. Everyone's from New York City. Jay Rowe on keyboards. Jerry Brooks on bass. And percussionist and vocalist Philip Hamilton. So it's a great, great bunch of guys. And I hope folks get to come down and hear us play this year at some point.
Oh, yeah, you definitely got to get a visual of your show, right?
Yeah.
Good deal. Well, Kaylee, man, have a safe one, man. We'll talk soon.
All right, good talking to you, man. Thank you again for doing this, and let me know when it airs at some point, okay?
Will do. Thank you.
All right, be well.
Bye. And a big shout out to Kaylee Minucci for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Man, it's just a true honor for me to talk to him. I've been a fan of his for a while, and, you know, just to have that one-on-one time with him, get his music perspectives and his opinions, and just to be able to share the journey with me is truly inspirational. And for more information on Chielli, you need to hit his website up at www.chiellimusic.com. And that's www.chiellimusic.com, chiellimusic.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up at www.spudtootight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so if you have an iPhone, an iPod, a Mac, or a PC, open up the iTunes player, go to the iTunes store, type in the Producer's Corner, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. And for the remainder of the show, I'm going to play one of Chielli's older tracks that he's performed live, and it's called Kicking It Hard. Man, it's one of my favorite tracks that he's done, and he was able to deliver the live version that we were discussing earlier in the interview. So for the remainder of the show, I'm going to let the track play out and close out the show. So until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace. Thank you.